and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 480. My name is James Gilmore. I am back from GDC with the obligatory GDC Lurgy. And joining me today is the return of Matthew Ford.
Hello.
And we are welcoming a new challenger to the table this time as well, Dan Sullivan.
Good to be here.
So we've already had the kind of introduction from Matt. If newcomers to the show haven't heard, you turned up a couple of episodes ago prior to the GDC gap. There's been 2 weeks while we've been away because I just wasn't here. But Dan, for those of you who aren't familiar with your work, listeners, what is it that you did before PG and what's the story with you coming here?
Okay, so before I joined Pocket Gamer, I ran a site, which I still run, called Big Boss Battle. Focuses on small indie games, and I also contribute to Indie Games Plus, which is the spiritual successor to indiegames.com, which focuses on small experiences and game jam games. And now I'm over at Pocket Gamer, I am the deputy editor.
Nice, and you've been knocking out features and whatnot this week, some of which we'll be discussing here. So do go over and check on PG for all of Dan's work, and also Pocket Gamer Biz for Matt's work. That's where he hails from. So we've got a nice mixture of consumer and business focused stuff, but ultimately it all bubbles up through the surface and then turns into games chat, which is the thing that we're all really here for. So speaking of, GDC breakdown is basically going to be the theme of this podcast because we're now back and there's been this gap. We've got lots to catch up on, including the likes of Google Stadia or Stadia. I couldn't find anyone to tell me how to pronounce it properly. The likes of Apple Arcade and all the games they've announced for their new subscription service. We've got stuff about Call of Duty. We've got potentially two new models of the Switch coming and details thereof, and some new releases, including the likes of Rush Rally 3, Holy Potatoes, A Spy Story, and more. But first, the news. So I was out in San Francisco doing that GDC thing, shaking hands with people and immediately forgetting their names after I've encountered them, and occasionally getting my hands on a bit of new game action here and there. One of the things that was big news at GDC this year was Google's Stadia. I'm going to go with Stadia for the podcast. I'll say Stadia next time on the show and then, you know, somewhere in the middle. This service, which has been announced, is going to be a streaming thing, which is going to allow people to get access to very, very high-end video games, which maybe run on lovely, extremely impressive rigs and run at like 4K, 8K, I've heard thrown around from time to time as well, which is just ridiculous. But 4K is what they're mainly touting. And the idea is you're going to be able to play these games sucked down through your internet tubes from some nice server farm out there in Silicon Valley, and then play it on your average PC or your average laptop or even your average phone or tablet. There's been not a whole lot of information revealed about the mobile side of this, which is obviously the bit we're most interested in, i.e. what phones, what tablets, how is this going to work, virtual controls, like MFI controllers, what? We don't really know. However, I did get to have a go on Stadia when I was over there. Dan, you were over there as well, weren't you?
I was indeed. I didn't get to have a look in, though.
So we weren't allowed to use the controller itself, which is a bit frustrating. They had it dotted around the Google camp in little glass containers, but we couldn't get our hands on it. But they did have lots of laptops set up with just a generic controller, and they were all streaming Stadia. So I jumped on. They were running Assassin's Creed Odyssey and had a go. It does work. First point, good point, handy to know.
That's handy.
And it runs fairly well. The first thing I did was try and do the latency test, i.e. just like flick an analog stick to make the camera turn and see how long it takes to respond. And there is a little bit of like noticeable delay, but not a great deal. So that's positive. It runs very smoothly in terms of frame rate. That was a nice thing. There wasn't a lot of stuttering and choppy business going on. And it's always difficult with some games, especially things like Ubisoft games, where you're like, I don't know how much of this is the streaming service, how much of this is the game and the game engine not running correctly or whatever. But it was quite nice to just play it on an average run-of-the-mill laptop and see the thing working in the way that they describe it. So that's good. On the other hand, quite a lot of artifacting is the thing I noticed. I was over there doing filming and stuff like that, and you notice it most around the UI. So little bits are popping up of text near the maps and whatever else is on screen. And do you know that thing where YouTube compresses data and it gets a lot of pixelation?
Yeah.
And the same thing with sort of video streaming, you can get like nasty artifacting around certain bits of detail. There was quite a lot of that hovering around. I took some photos, actually. You can see that this is definitely being streamed from somewhere, and it's not running off a local console. Putting it to you two guys, I don't know how much you care about visuals versus gameplay versus convenience. Like, does this Stadia thing appeal to you?
It does. I think it's something that needs testing. It's obviously not been in the wild yet, and until we get that, we don't really know what it's actually going to be until we actually get it in the hands of consumers. It said that it was 25 megabits is recommended. Is that right?
Yeah.
Not everybody has that internet connection.
Well, Dan, you moved house recently, didn't you? And you went from a particularly good internet connection to a perhaps less than stellar one.
Yeah, I'm now at about a sixth of the internet that I was at before. And while 25 megabits isn't much, it's about 3 megabytes. That's still 3 megabytes that not everyone will be able to actually achieve.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the Stadia, but...
Plural of stadium.
Yeah,
definitely not. That's not how language works.
But I think that, because I'm a person who focuses on kind of gameplay over visuals, but I know that in the PC market, the kind of hardcore PC market, there's so many people that are so heavily focused on high frame rates and get quite upset when there are things like screen tearing and visual artifacts. So they're presumably going to be streaming the PC builds of these games. I don't know. I feel like they're going to have to face a little bit of pushback from the PC community when this comes about. As well as that, we've tried streaming stuff before and it hasn't really worked. So I don't know what... I mean, Google's probably the best company in the world to try it and pull it off because of the size of their data centers, but not sure.
See, I think Google Stadia is the future for all game technologies, but it's more is can the technology survive in this day and age?
It's something we've talked about a bunch on the podcast before, Dan, where we're talking about the idea of previous streaming services, and we've said it loads of times, but yes, OnLive was the original fully worldwide launch template for this kind of thing, and it crashed and burned fairly quickly because the infrastructure simply wasn't there.
Yep.
And this is Google setting the new precedent for it. And as they say, when they're talking about 25 megabits and there, that's what we need. That's what you're going to have to be able to pull down if you want a good experience. And immediately, even though, as you say, it doesn't seem like much, that locks out huge chunks of the world, just like right off the bat, who will not be able to maintain that level of streaming. And the idea of the service seems to be putting these kind of games in the hands of people who maybe don't have a dedicated console, maybe don't want to shell out $1,500 for a top spec gaming PC, and are therefore not what people would call like enthusiast gamers or people willing to dedicate tons of time. What they're trying to do is give access to it to everybody, put it in everybody's hands, be the Spotify of it all.
Building a game platform for everyone. That was the slogan.
And then the idea is that people who do continue to play, you know, serious competitive stuff or, you know, play PC games and build massive rigs will become like vinyl collectors are to people who just listen to like the top 10 on Spotify.
Got you. The mention of it as a platform does remind me that because of a lot of my time outside of Pocket Gamer is spent in the PC space. And there's a lot of hoo-ha about the Epic launcher and about the business practices and the now competition and the increasing amount of launchers that are appearing on PC because it was heavily dominated by Valve with Steam. So kind of this kind of leads on to the question of will Google operate their own storefront like with Google Play on the PC, and will they be bringing all of these third parties in? What will the pricing structure be for this? Will there be different services within that?
Yeah, pricing's a weird one because alongside this, we've had Apple Arcade announced, which is obviously dedicated to Apple products. So it's going to be iPhone, iPad, and Apple TV. And that is not a streaming service. That's a more traditional game bundle download thing. So you pay a monthly fee and that gives you access to a library. And so it's more akin to something like what they're doing on Xbox and PlayStation stores with things like the game passes and that sort of thing.
Yeah, the significant thing with that is it works offline.
Yeah. So it could more traditional download business. And that I think people are A, more comfortable with because they've seen it working. And the idea that you don't have to be connected all the time is a huge plus for a lot of people. A lot of the comments we get whenever we put up any review of any kind, and this is true on the YouTube channel as well, it's just like someone always asks, like, always online ? Because that's a huge hurdle for people. It's like, hey, I don't have infinite data, or my connection's really bad in my house, so if it's always online, I literally can't play this.
Yep.
And that's a huge hurdle for a lot of people. So these things do seem to be targeting like quite different audiences, with Apple's being a much more, in their traditional standard, walled garden affair. So the games that they're going to launch on this Apple Arcade service, they've been really weird about the wording, because it says it's exclusive, like dedicated games for this service, but it's not 100% sure whether it's like, is it just for people who subscribe to Apple Arcade, or is it just going to be available on iOS, but you could maybe download the games and buy them separately as well?
No, so they are completely exclusive to the service. You're not able to buy them as a separate download.
Really?
Yeah. That's
right. Okay. They've released the names of a bunch of the games that they are going to be launching with the service, some of which are really interesting because they are extending old franchises from back in the day. So we've got the likes of Beneath the Steel Sky being brought up to date with, I think it's Beyond the Steel Sky?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's a sequel 30-something years in the making, which is quite remarkable. If you're not familiar with the original one, it's a point-and-click adventure game from Revolution, sort of sci-fi classic in the mold of something like your Broken Sword or something like that. So that's fun and exciting, because I still remember that from the first time around. Although, looking at the trailer, it's all 3D and completely different.
Nothing's dead forever.
Yeah, but it's also mutated into something new, which is good. I mean, they're not just doing another point-and-click adventure, but it's weird seeing it not just look like a LucasArts game.
Yeah.
They've got the Oceanhorn 2. They've got that as an exclusive for their service. That's quite big.
Yeah, it looks like exactly like Breath of the Wild.
It really does. So the first Oceanhorn, which was in no uncertain terms a Zelda-inspired game, and let's put it nicely, but that came at a time, interestingly, when Nintendo was still trumpeting this whole Nintendo will never go on mobile. If Nintendo ever makes a mobile game, it will be the death of Nintendo, blah, 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 blah. And then like a year or two later, they went, yeah, Super Mario Run. Go on then.
That's right. And that one was more top-down as well, where this one does seem more open world as Breath of the Wild, as I said, which for mobile looks much more interesting to me personally.
I'm always a little bit iffy on third-person and first-person games on mobile because the controls can be so easily messed up. Mm. But I did talk to the Oceanhorn 2 guys at one of our PG events, and they showed a lot of stuff, and they showed it running. So Oceanhorn worked really well. We think we gave it like 8 out of 10 or something in the reviews because we really liked the skill and talent that had gone into making the game. I personally was a little bit like, now take all of this skill and talent and make something that isn't quite so obviously an homage to another game.
Make your own thing, basically.
Yeah, make your own thing. And there's also the issue of, like, the reason we kind of gave it a pass was like, all right, then clearly it's doing Zelda, but we're never going to get Zelda on mobile. So this is plugging a gap. It's scratching an itch. Now, we almost certainly are going to get Zelda on mobile.
Definitely. I mean, we've got Mario Kart Tour lined up for this year, but after that, you can imagine them dipping into, like, their own 2D version.
Yeah, well, Zelda's got to be like the next one after Mario Kart, I've got to imagine. So they're definitely cooking something up. And in a world where you can get Zelda on mobile, I'm like, where does this fit now? But I'm sure it'll be a good game. And there's a full list, actually, we've knocked up. I guess there's like, I don't know, 10, 20 of these things that they've announced. And the idea is they want 100 games to play by the end of the year. Problem is, they've released no information about the price or format of the subscription service, have they?
No price currently, and no official date. All we've got is they said they'll come back in summer and tell us more, and we don't even know when in summer. People were pressing them saying, is this E3? And they were going, summer. So yeah. We're like, okay.
Yeah, Google turned around and said one of them's releasing in fall and one is more information around E3 time. So...
okay.
I mean, I looked at a couple of the release dates for a few of the games that they mentioned that weren't out just yet, and they're releasing in fall, like Overland, for instance.
Oh, right, I see.
But it may launch before, and these games that we've seen might not be a launch lineup. They might just be like a hot reel of games that they especially want to hold up that will be part of the package when it launches.
Yeah, I could see them getting somewhere around September.
Yeah.
certainly with the streaming stuff, this is the beginning of the big shift, I think. I do think that it will have a Spotify-esque effect. I think it's going to take a while. I do share, you know, your concerns that I don't reckon this is going to hit straight out the gate, because I don't think we're quite at the level of internet which Silicon Valley seems to think we are. Because the way they talk about it, it's like, well, you know, all you need is this amount of internet. And yep. Like, you know, 50% of the world goes, sorry, how much? What?
Yeah.
I can't even get 480p Netflix streaming properly. Like, I know I speak from a privileged position where I can pull down 100 and I'm fine in this place. But I've been in other areas where I haven't been able to get that. And if you live anywhere rural in the UK, you are boned.
Yeah.
You get your data sent to you on strips of paper via carrier pigeon. You've got no chance of running anything like this. So, yeah, those people, I guess, that's the console market. That's the people, well, you have to buy your consoles and you have to still buy boxed games because it takes you a week to download the latest thing off of the Xbox Live Store.
Yeah, there is the argument that Google launching this and then other companies that are likely to fall suit, like Microsoft are rumoured to be doing an all-streaming diskless console, will then push the internet providers, you know, to push 5G and 4G out further and further. So I think, you know, once the demand is there, it'll eventually come.
It will get there. Like, the PC that I put together over Christmas has no disk drive. Like, the only thing it pulls games down from is the internet. And I didn't even really consider that when I was making it, but it's just been so long since I put a CD drive into this machine. So I'm already running a diskless system, which I play games on. So it's here, but I'm aware that that only works for me because I have a decent connection. So I did really want to try the controller, though. But they kept it away from me. It looks like the Xbox controller, only they've done the PlayStation style analog sticks mirroring each other on the same axis rather than that swap around they do. But yeah, we'll see how that turns out. We will keep you informed of all the changes and announcements as and when they come. Now, other details, little bits and pieces. Call of Duty Mobile got a trailer during the old GDC bit. Did everybody get a chance to look at this?
This was the minute-long trailer rather than the, like, 30-second teaser that they put out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had a look at this. It's interesting. I think this could be the first time that they... I think this could be important for them because this is the first time they've done, like, a conventional Call of Duty on mobile, and it looks like all of the basic stuff's there, so...
Well, I'm spotting what looks like a Battle Royale mode at the end there.
When the helicopter opens up, yeah.
There's a definite island beneath them. And it would be mad if they didn't have that at this point because everyone has to jump on the older Battle Royale bandwagon. They've had a couple of Call of Duty games near the beginning. I think they did a Zombies one, which was like a standard first-person Call of Duty game on mobile. And they've had a whole bunch of variations. So they've had one which was like half FPS, half tactical, where you could like pull out and look at it from a top-down, but then you can whoosh in and do the first-person stuff as well. I think we've reached a point now where the first person controls on mobile are a little bit more refined, and I think people are more accustomed to playing these kind of games on a touchscreen. They've come along with a lot of good workarounds, which, and I don't know how you feel about this, Dan, but I'm personally in favor of the whole whenever you move your reticle over an enemy, you automatically start firing system on mobile.
Yeah, I mean, it works well on mobile. I don't know how it will convert if they gain, or how people will feel if they gain a lot of players from the existing console user base.
Yeah.
However, it does work really well on mobile.
Because you're always needing to find solutions to the fact that you don't have enough fingers. Prime example of this being, we talked about a couple of weeks back, the PlayStation 4 Remote Play app, which lets you stream your game. I did a video of it this week. I had a go at it now that I'm back from the show.
Right. And what do you think?
Yeah, hot damn, that's completely worthless.
Yeah.
Like, as I understand it, if you have an Xperia, like a Sony phone, you can hook up a controller to it. So it does work on that. But for the average person who is just trying to play God of War on their mobile phone with a superimposed, bunch of soft keys. Oh, it's just total garbage. It's like the novelty of running it on the phone lasts for about 10 seconds. And then you're like, yeah, I can't play this. This is horrible because you've only got two thumbs. And that is the thing that we're always fighting against on mobile. So little things like auto fire when the reticle drifts over your person removes the need to remove your thumb and hit another spot on the screen and therefore stop moving. And it's all these little compromises that need to be made to make the thing flow and feel comfortable and have pace on mobile. So I imagine they've been looking hard at all that stuff, and you know, things like the success of the Gameloft version of it, the Modern Combat series. I can see this working. We don't have a date for this one, do we? They've just, like, we're going to reveal more at a certain time.
You can pre-register for a public beta currently, but yeah, no official release date.
Gotcha. All right, then. Let's go to the Switch for a little bit, because I know there is some Switch info. There was a Wall Street Journal article which came out, and then sources connected to them have been saying that there's going to be two new versions of the Switch in the future. Now, one of them is going to be the refined, more impressive, hardcore version, and the other one's going to be the light and fluffy, cheaper, easy-to-access version, right?
Basically, yeah. So the cheaper model's supposedly going to remove vibration features and then stop the Joy-Cons from being detachable.
Okay.
So it's going to be like an all-in-one unit sort of thing. And then the higher-end, more premium Switch, we have no details about currently. But personally myself, I think, you know, increasing the screen size, reducing the bezel, that sort of thing will go a long way.
The screen itself is 720, isn't it?
Yes, believe so.
Resolution. So I'm wondering if they would ever consider upping it, but Nintendo have never been that fussed about resolution. Like, that's not their bag.
Yeah, it's never been their thing.
And it's probably not really powerful enough to be pushing out 1080p on all the games that they were running, so... And to be honest, at that size, it doesn't really matter that much. I mean, it's weird thinking that your phone will have a 4K resolution, but this massive Nintendo Switch screen doesn't. But does that make Breath of the Wild any less pretty? Doesn't really, because it's about the art direction.
I was going to say, that's what they tend to go to, don't they? They do art directions that hold up over time. Stuff like Wind Waker and all that, which, you know, you look at now and it's still stunning, even, what, 15 years after?
Mm. Are you a Switch guy, Dan?
I do have a Switch, yeah.
Good luck.
I can't think of what they'll probably do, though. Maybe they'll go down the route of the PlayStation and Xbox, and they'll just add greater internal storage to the larger one and just keep that lower entry-level one there to kind of, I guess, kill off the last of the DS, because they haven't officially delisted the DS yet, but they're not really doing much for it now. So maybe this will be like the... You know, you don't need to get that handheld. Now's the time to get this. And maybe they'll release it at the DS price point.
Yeah, that's what they think the cheaper model's going to be, actually. That's going to be its successor.
Yeah.
So, like, sub 200 somewhere.
Yeah, I think they used to launch... It's been a long time since I worked in the shops, but I'm pretty sure they used to launch about 140 quid, 130 quid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a little bit cheaper, isn't it? And yeah, if they just keep the Joy-Cons attached...
I just want purple Joy-Cons. Is that too much to ask for, really?
Apparently it is.
Yeah.
Well, I liked the luminous yellow ones that they released. That was a gaudy and disgusting, and I kind of wanted them.
The arms one, yeah.
Yeah, I approve of that massively. But yeah, this is an interesting time. It's not surprising because every console gets iterations, and Nintendo more than anyone else with their handhelds. I mean, there were so many versions of the DS, and the 2DS, and the DS Lite, and the 3DS XL, and... They just keep churning them out.
And the DSi and the...
On and on. Yeah. So this was always going to be in the console's future.
Absolutely.
I like the idea of a lighter model to bring people on board. But as far as the premium one goes, I guess you guys play it because I don't have one. Do you find it too heavy over time? Is it, would you appreciate like a slimmer version or does it not really bother you?
I mean, for me, not really. I don't use it that much on the go, to be honest. I use it more as, you know, a home console and everything like that. But whenever I've took it on trains and everything, it's fine. I've never struggled with it. What about you, Dan?
I wouldn't say it's heavy, but it could have definitely done with a better stand on the back of it.
Yeah, that's actually a very, very good call.
At the minute, it's just this tiny little, probably about 3 centimetre wide thing, well off centre to one side of the device.
Mm.
The idea being that you can kind of lean it back on it if you've got it in landscape, but if it's in portrait, you can stand it on it like one of those old picture frames that used to fall over all the time. Yeah,
I got you.
So because the pinball, I think it was Zen Pinball, was played in portrait, which was quite cool. But yeah, a better stand for it would have been good.
The other thing is thinking controller wise, just little modifications like actually putting a headphone jack in.
Yeah,
that could go a long way.
Isn't there also an issue where the charging cable's on the bottom of the screen so you can't charge and put it on a table? Is that right?
Yeah, it is on the bottom of the screen, yeah. It hasn't been that much of a problem for me. But yeah, if they had another charging port so that you could, you know, dock it, or if it didn't matter what way you docked it and it was just on the top, then, Yeah, that'd be an improvement.
Yeah, quality of life improvements, I think, will go a long way.
Yeah, and I'm sure they've been collecting plenty of your personal data during all your playthroughs to work out what people like and don't like.
Fab.
We'll wait and see what they come out with about that. But as soon as we have any more information, we will, of course, let everybody know. Now, Matt, you were looking at the Nindies while we were away. What did you discover about that stuff?
Yeah, so the Nindie Showcase took place last Wednesday. So Nintendo obviously showed off their latest indie games that are coming out in the next couple of months. And they started off with a bang, showing off Cuphead for Switch.
Oh, yes. I saw people freaking out at GDC about that.
Yeah, I don't know if you've played it. It's fantastic. I've played it on my Xbox, and it's one of the best art styles we've seen on a console for years and years. The soundtrack as well is incredible. I want to pick up the vinyl of it. It's that damn good. So they had Cuphead, which is amazing. Then they moved on, and we had some interesting games like The Red Lantern from Timberland Studio, where it was basically you've got a pack of dogs and you're going through the Alaskan wilderness trying to find your way home, and it's like a really somber tale and you're looking after these dogs and then you get attacked by a bear and it's all really traumatic. So
Jesus.
That looked really good.
It did.
Oh yeah, it's super pretty. I can see it running. Yeah. Oh, you get to do the whole thing where you're riding with the huskies.
That's right.
And shouting mush at your screen. Oh, it's pretty. Yeah, all right, I'm into this.
You wait till that bear attacks.
What else am I seeing here? Cuphead announcement. Hang on. Cadence of Hyrule, Crypt of the Necrodancer, featuring what? Featuring The Legend of Zelda? Oh my god. Okay, explain this to me.
Okay, so it's a Zelda spin-off by the looks of it. They closed out the show showing off the what looked like Crypt of Necrodancer, and then slowly encompassed themes from Legend of Zelda. So you had like the overworld, and then you were going, oh, what's this? This looks familiar. And then the Zelda beats started to come in, the music and everything. And then Link and Zelda appeared, and then they confirmed it's a full Zelda spin-off, which is incredible. I mean, it looks awesome. I don't know if you've played the Cadence of Hyrule games. They are rhythm-based games.
See, no, I haven't. I haven't encountered those ones before. I've played in Crypt of the Necrodancer, but I'm not the Zelda stuff.
Yeah, so this is a brand new one from Zelda.
Yeah.
So obviously they're merging the two together, and it's just great to see Nintendo really licensing out their big properties to small studios, which is something we haven't seen like ever.
No, that's a real first. I mean, I'm trying to think of another example of this, because Nintendo characters do appear, but generally they're in other Nintendo and or Capcom games. Mm. So the whole Smash Bros. Mashups and all of that stuff. I suppose Soul Blade.
Yeah.
Link appeared in Soul Blade, didn't he? Soul Calibur, rather?
Soul Calibur, yeah. That was huge at the time. I'm trying to think of others.
We were talking about with Rick a few weeks ago, before he left. R.I.P. Rick, by the way. He's dead now. They're allowing a lot more spicy content onto their app store, which is sort of surprising. Stuff on the eShop you wouldn't necessarily expect to see on there back in the day.
Yeah.
But also the idea that the Switch is coming home to becoming a home to lots of indie titles in the way that the PS Vita was always supposed to, and it did. It had lots of great indie stuff on it, but it never quite got the audience. So for them to be partnering up with these guys, which is, you know, as a small little game, Crypt of the Necrodancer, that's a big get for them.
Yeah, Mario plus Rabbids, that's the only other one I could think of.
That's true. Mario, yeah, that's syncing up with Ubisoft. Yeah. That's true. Yeah.
And obviously giving Mario guns at the first time, everyone was a bit hesitant about that.
Yeah,
I'd consider that, actually.
It's surprising how Nintendo have over the years moved away from that kind of non-violent, family-friendly image, and they are letting their brand images go out there. I mean, it was such a big deal, like you said earlier, when they went onto mobile, because there had never really been Nintendo characters on anything other than Nintendo platforms, unless there had been, I guess, a lot of paperwork signed.
Yeah, they've drawn out some deals, and now they seem to be quite comfortable and happy with farming them out to all and sundry, which I don't think is a bad thing. Like, they've been so protective for so long, I don't mind seeing them go out and play in other people's worlds and sandboxes. That's quite fun.
Apart from that, yeah, we got a sequel to Blaster Master. So, to Blaster Master Zero, that looks really cool. Stranger Things 3 popped up again. That was announced at the Game Awards. And that was shown off to be coming on July 4th, the same day that the show premieres, the next series.
So Stranger Things 3, and this is going to be what kind of game, do we know?
It's like a top-down sort of beat them up, I think.
Yeah, it was like an isometric brawler. So you were kind of looking down at, it's hard to explain, but it was like a closer up. You know, the angle that Syndicate and stuff was shot from. It's like a tighter version of that. But a brawler, and you're moving. You had that almost early Atari vibe, but you're moving diagonally down the screen, or at least it looked like for most of the trailer that they were moving diagonally down the screen, just brawling, taking turns, clearing screens and doing little button puzzles to get through. It looked really cool. Had a really good 80s aesthetic to it.
Mm.
Well, they've got their license there to do whatever they want regarding 80s themed stuff, because that's the nature of the show.
That's it.
And that mobile game they released for free. They released The Strangest Things, the mobile game, at the same time of the second season, roughly, for free. And it was actually quite good.
Yeah.
It was like a little action RPG puzzler thing. And it was not rubbish.
Mm.
And they were genuinely not charging any money for it. It's no in-app payments or anything like that. It's worth a look if you're listening. It's surprisingly not bad.
And the only other one I'd like to shout out is Tim Schafer's new game.
Yeah,
from
Rad.
Double Fine. Rad! Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like a 3D top-down action roguelike. And
gotcha.
It's very neon.
Oh, it is, isn't it? Look at that.
And
yeah.
It's also got that kind of slightly 80s vibe in it as well. Everything's rad and radical, and it's about TV and VHS, but also being in this post-apocalyptic twice-over wasteland. I got to play some of this at GDC, actually.
Oh, did you? How did it play?
Yeah, I really quite enjoyed it. I found the pacing to be a bit odd. You have to find these large skull towers that kind of pull up from the ground and then fire off this big, bright neon laser beam that unlocks the next area. But I could only find one of those. But I messed around with the mutation system. I quite enjoyed the combat in there. It was good.
It looks pretty. It's got that sort of standard Tim Schafer Double Fine sense of humour where everything's very colourful and cartoony. And yes, lots of purple and pink. We will not be escaping this 80s aesthetic for some time by the looks of it. But we've got a whole big list of all the games that are released there if you want to go and have a look on the PG site. Oh, Nuclear Throne's coming as well. Oh, that's nice. You know, Raimi. That'll be good. And Super Crate Box. Holy cow.
And they announced a new one that was... Was it Superbug? I can't remember the name.
Yeah, Superbug. That's right.
Yeah,
good for them. Cool. All right, then, yeah, go check out the stuff on PG for more info. Out and about this week, I'm going to start off with Rush Rally 3, which is from Brown Monster Limited. So this studio, I don't know if they do other games. I think they pretty much work exclusively on this Rush Rally series. And it's been, for a while, the best of show kind of thing for the App Store. These are the guys who do a very decent interpretation of the rally formula on mobile, because it's kind of at the more slightly more hardcore end of the racing genre. Rally games are notoriously tough, because rallying is quite tough. It's less of a wild arcade experience where you're doing like, you know, you can just ricochet off walls and stuff and it doesn't matter. Here, if you go off the track, you just wind up in a valley or a ditch or up a tree, and then your time is ruined by 15 seconds and you might as well just start the entire bloody season over. So
at least you're not getting stressed out about it.
No, it's fine. So they're quite demanding of you, but it does find the balance here on mobile, because obviously you're not doing the full serious experience with a real steering wheel and you know, taking it the full sim PC route. But they've always managed to strike a really nice balance with this series. And the third one is no exception. It feels good. So you have an option of a couple of control methods. You can do the touch to turn left, touch to turn right, or you can do tilt. Both work pretty well. Tilt is fairly decent. Visually, it's very smart. It's not like the best looking of the racing games. It's not up there with Real Racing 3 or something like that. But it's plenty good enough to get you going. And it's much more about the control and the feel of the game, which is what I would rather focus on with this anyway. There's also the thing where rallying is not a pretty sport. Like, you get moments of it when you're cresting a hill or something and the sun is setting and you go, oh, it's quite nice, when you're trolling along the edge of a cliff next to a beach. But generally speaking, it's grey, it's overcast, everything's covered in mud, and it's probably nighttime. And it's a very British, like, grimy-ass looking sport. And that is reflected in the game, which is no bad thing. The differences they've got here. So you've got the main campaign season, which is runs and runs, and, you know, go around the world, do your tours. Campaigns are broken up into individual stages, mm-hmm. and then each stage has like one or two sections as well. You're only ever on your own on the track, like with real rallying. So it's about you just perfecting your racing lines and getting your times down. But there are also other modes. They have like just single race stuff. You can take cars you haven't bought yet for a test drive, which is a really nice feature that I think should be in more games, because you'll often spend ages trying to unlock a particular car or saving up for one, and then you buy it and you're like, eh, this isn't quite what I was after, or it doesn't feel quite right. And the ability to actually just scroll through the list and have a quick go, you're just only allowed to do it on one track. Actually a really nice feature. So you can get a feel for each vehicle and which one you might want to take. And when you get it, you can work out which upgrades you'd want to make to customize it and, you know, mess with the torque. That's a car word, isn't it? Torque.
You're telling me.
Yeah, and make it your own. So that's pretty good. They've also got some other weird modes. Like you can do these novelty, I can't remember what they're called, challenges or something like that. But there's one mode where you're basically set out onto a domestic motorway, and so it's two-lane traffic. Suddenly there are cars everywhere, and you're trying to overtake cars in your lane whilst avoid oncoming traffic. And suddenly that's a whole different game for a rally thing. So they've added a little bit of, you know, extra stuff in there. It's premium. It's £3.99. I think it's well worth it. If you are an enthusiast for this kind of thing, this is probably as good as you're going to get on mobile. And that's been true of the other games, Rush Rally 2 in particular. And I think it's still true now of the third one. So there is a written review that Harry did, really liked it. I've got the video review up on PG's YouTube, so go and take a look at it so you can see all the mud for yourself. But yeah, broadly recommending this. It's good stuff if you are into that kind of thing. Now, Matt, what have you been playing on that Switch?
So I've been playing this week Captain Toad Treasure Tracker Special Episode.
This was discussed in a previous podcast where Rick was excited about playing through the whole thing again, because it's now got the two-player mode as well, isn't it?
Yes.
Is that a thing?
Yes, yeah. So you can play with Toad and Toadette.
But you've been playing the additional chapter. Is it like a whole bit of DLC? Is it one level? Is it an episode containing loads of stuff? What is it?
So it's like remixed levels of the original game, if you see what I mean. So there's 18 levels in total. It's a pretty decent chunk for the price. So it's £5.39 or $5.99. There's quite a lot of good creativity in it. It's good, obviously, incorporating the two-player mode, and it's just more Captain Toad, to be honest. So if you did enjoy the original release, you can't go wrong. The only qualm I'd probably have with it, there's a lot of these Boo levels where you're playing as Toad and you need to kill the Boos, as it was, by flashing your headlight directly at them.
Right.
And there's quite a lot of these levels, so if that's not your thing, or you got frustrated with them in the original, you may want to miss out on it. But on the other hand, there is some really creative levels. The one in particular that springs to mind is Flip Panel Panic. I think that's the name of it, where you have to step on these exclamation buttons, which set off a chain of flip panels, which then Toad must run across before they disappear. And it's just the look on his little face when he's sprinting away in absolute terror while these panels unfold behind him. It's worth the money there alone.
Excellent. I assume you're still playing through, or have you completed them all already? Or
I completed them all, yeah. So I did them all last night. But there's enough to go back to. You can collect 3 gems on each level, little collectibles. And then on top of that, they have like a hidden secret. So sometimes it's find the golden mushroom. Other times it's like light all the firelights. Stuff like that. Little things to keep you coming back.
Gotcha. All right, well, that's well worth checking out. I'm sure we'll have a write-up on PG as well, if you want to take a look. Another thing that's out this week for mobile, we've got Holy Potatoes! A Spy Story? Which has an exclamation point and a question mark after it, hence my bullshit intonation. So this is, I guess, the latest episode in an ongoing franchise, I suppose, yeah. Which is Holy Potatoes! Colon Some Stuff. So we've had a weapon shop where you have to run a weapon store. We've had We're in Space. We've had What the Hell. I don't know if all of these have made it onto mobile. Certainly the weapon shop one did. But the latest is A Spy Story. And the idea is that you set up your own agency by recruiting other... I was going to say assassins then, because that's where my head immediately goes. Other spies which have their own individual stats. And then you get an overworld view, which looks an awful lot like those kind of Simpsons tapped out Family Guy story, you know,
yeah,
where people are just idly wandering around a map and then you're building different buildings in order to either upgrade your troops or create special abilities for yourselves and train cadets and all that kind of business. But then you go off on missions and you assign different spies to different missions based on their own particular skill set. It brings up a lot of menus. It's quite menu driven, this one. So when you open up a mission and say, I want to do this, well, it provides you a little, very small gridded map. And it's going to says like, here's the route. You're going to have to go here, 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 and here. And along the way, you'll encounter maybe two guards or something. And each guard will have their own individual strengths and weaknesses. So you want to adjust your method of attack or method of avoidance accordingly. So the stats we're talking about here are like strength and stealth and charisma or charm or something like that. And guards will be susceptible to one or more of these things. So you can say, right, I'll try and charm my way past this guy. I will try and beat up this guy. And all of this gives me the best chance for success. And then when you start the mission, you don't suddenly zoom inside a building and see someone stealthing through. It all plays out in the lower left-hand corner of the screen. And all you get is like a little bar. And you've got your icon for your character kind of just moving from left to right. And then you'll encounter an icon of a character. And there'll be a little animation of them jiggling around a bit. And then it will tell you what happened in a very Football Manager kind of way. And then you move on to the next one, and then you'll see if you make it through to the end. All the while this is going on, there's a little alert meter which is climbing on the right-hand side of that lower bar. And if it hits alert, then you effectively fail the mission. If you fail certain attacks or you don't manage to charm a dude or something, the alert climbs and climbs and climbs. And so there is a kind of abort mission button at the top, where if it's looking like it's getting too hairy and you're not going to make it, you can just go, cancel, tap out of this, we're going to get rumbled. And then you have to wait in order to do the mission again and all of that stuff. There's a lot of waiting that goes on because you have to build up your areas, you have to train up your spies. While they're doing that, they're incapacitated, so you can't use them. Once they've completed a mission, they need a chance to cool down and hang out, and so you can't use one of them, so you need to move on to another one of your spies. So it's one of these ones where you're constantly swapping between your assets, and while one person is training, the other person is active, and you need to keep managing them and checking back in with the app. And again, it does feel a little bit like those clicky games where you're just sort of collecting stuff. There's much more involvement in this. I'm not saying it is a Simpsons tapped out, but there are elements of it there, which I'm not super keen on, but I quite liked the very stripped down way in which the spy attempts, the missions played out. I was initially like, oh, I don't actually get to do these missions. But it's quite a neat little system. And I can see it working for something you just want to drop in and drop out of once or twice a day.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be spending a great deal of time with it because, I don't know, I want to be more engaged for longer periods of time, I think. I'm not sure how the review will play out. I played it for about like an hour and a half. But we'll wait and see what our reviewers say about it and then do the video review accordingly. It's downloadable right now. I was going to say it's free to play, but now I don't know. Early potatoes.
It looks interesting, though. I'm just watching the trailer now. I like the colours and everything and the art style they're going for. It's
very cartoony. It seems to skew young, almost.
It reminds me of Fairly Odd Parents or something like that.
Yeah, you're not wrong. It is a bit like that. Okay, $4.99, so it's properly premium. Interesting.
I was going to say, okay. It's definitely costs on other platforms.
It's like over a tenner on Steam, I think. Yeah. So, yes, $4.99 for that one. In that case, yeah, we'll definitely do the review and the video review, and we'll let you know whether that stands up to extended play or not. So that's worth a look. I'll jump over to something that I've also played a little bit of, and then, Dan, you want to talk about something that's coming up in the not-too-distant future. But we had a new baseball game appear, and I'm now going to grab my phone because I want to know what the full list of initials it is. MLB TSB 19, which is MLB Tap Sports Baseball. I assume that's Major League Baseball. They say baseball twice. I don't know. Whatever. New baseball games come out. I think it's available on the Switch as well, but this is the mobile version. Mm-hmm. And it is a super stripped down baseball sim. The gameplay aspect from your point of view is you tap. That's pretty much it. So you are standing at the, I'm going to say mound. I don't know if the mound is the bit where you throw the ball from, or I think that's the bit where you throw it from. I'm English, so I loosely understand cricket, but not baseball. It makes no sense to us. And why are you all in your pajamas? So you are just tapping in order to try and hit the balls that are thrown at you. There's no, like, move the character around. There's no charging meter. There's no directional input. It's just tap at the right time. And the game is working out whether they're going to strike you out or not, or whether it's a foul throw.
Plate. So that's what it's called.
Plates. There you go. That sounds right. That sounds like a thing I heard someone say in Cheers once. Yeah, so you're just trying to tap, and it's working out within a split second whether the ball is going to go wide or low, and therefore you shouldn't swing, because if you swing, then that's bad, apparently, in the sport. And then if it is on target, you need to make sure you definitely do swing and hit it, otherwise they're going to strike you out. And then after that, you can choose whether you run to first base, second base, or whether you stay and stuff like that. So you have control over the movements of your players once they're on the field. Beyond that, not too much is going on. Clearly designed to be a simple, light, easy to access thing. I understand people love this series. This is the latest in a few entries.
Yeah, very popular.
It was very easy to pick up, and I initially went, ugh, and rolled my eyes at it. And then once I got into the swing of working out what the game was about, and it really is about...
That was a good pun.
Don't know. I hate myself even as I was saying it. Working out whether it's going to be a strike or whether it's going to be a foul ball, that's kind of the game. So suddenly it's about the judgment of, is this going wide? Is this going, no, it's not, it's going to strike, hit. And that's the sort of second-to-second fun of it.
Okay.
And there is something there. And it is a very light, you know, play with one hand, easy to pick up and put down sort of thing. Haven't played it a lot. It's not necessarily my jam. But if you do want to play it, it's available for free at the moment on iPhone, iPad, and Android, and that's MLB BS something 19. Just type in baseball. I'm sure it'll turn up.
A home run, would you say?
You sure? No, I wouldn't say that. I'd say sliding into second, and then I'd stop saying anything else. That's where the knowledge ends. Red Sox!
Great
I'd
pitch.
Say Red Sox. There we go. They all wear red socks. Dan, you've been with the site like for just coming up to a week now, yep. So you've mostly been focused on like finding your feet and writing features and everything rather than playing all the new releases.
Yeah.
But from your background and from being at GDC, you played one of the games that's going to be appearing on this Apple Arcade store.
Yeah. So I've played Overland, which was shown also on the Nintendo Indies presentation and, yeah, as part of the Apple Arcade. Okay. I got early access to this. It was on the itch.io refinery program, which is like early access, about 3 years ago. There are about 300 odd updates into it now, and it's coming along really well. It's like post-societal America. The society just kind of fell apart in the 1970s. I don't know why. There's weird little aliens scuppering around that are pretty malicious. It's a turn-based, squad-based game, but it's really like concentrated. They've really taken away a lot of the extra fluff that you didn't need. So each character or each unit, I suppose, that you control, because you can also control dogs, has got like two move or two action points for each turn. And that can, so that can be like, move here, pick something up, that can just be run somewhere. It's somehow even simpler than XCOM because it's less the abilities, but you've got an inventory. So this all plays out through these kind of cutaway dioramas, which you may have seen pictures of. They're really beautiful. It's an amazing art style. And so you'll have like a petrol station, and that will be the entire point of this level of this event, because it plays out like a, I call them rogue trips, but you know, like FTL and Death Road to Canada, where they're kind of these event-based roguelikes.
Into the Breach is similar, isn't it? Is it?
Into the Breach is more, I don't know, I'd have said that was more tactical, more kind of turn-based tactics. But yeah, so like the event system. So you go somewhere and it's just someone that wants to sell you something, but then you go somewhere else. And so there are all of these isolated incidents that are in a random order so that the game's different each time you play.
Okay.
And yeah, so it's just about, well, it says at the start, it says go west, steal a car, find gas, find friends. And that's pretty much what you do. But as you get further west, everything gets crazier. So the creatures get bigger. There's like strange phenomenon going on. Certain resources get harder to find.
The creatures, they're like weird rock jellyfish.
Yeah, you've probably gone and figured out the entire plot twist there. you've ruined it for me. You probably find out halfway through. It was something to do with an aquatic experiment. And yeah, that's it. Jellyfish on land. There's probably a really big shark at the end.
It was the shark all along. No, actually, the shark was inside us. All along.
The shark was the friends we made along the way.
That's right. That's right. I do like the look, and I'm not even not being a huge tactical game fan, I did really enjoy certainly the first of the XCOM, I guess, remakes or whatever you want to call it, the more recent ones. They did work very well. And they worked well on mobile as well. The port was very, very decent.
They made it work
greatly. So this is the kind of stuff where you are tapping between tiles and dragging your finger and you go here, you go here. This stuff works brilliantly on an iPad.
That's it. And like I said, the controls are on the PC, you don't even need to use the keyboard. It's left click and right click and then navigate. So that, and the right click's only used to cancel when you've selected something you didn't want to. So this will very easily port over to mobile platforms.
Nice. And the art style is very clean as well.
Yeah.
It's not like super, super detailed. So that stuff works well on a small screen too. Okay, now I'm into this. This looks interesting. So Overland is the name of that one. And we're going to be seeing that on the Apple Arcade in the not too distant. I can't believe we've gone through the entire show and I imagine people have been screaming at us. And we haven't mentioned the fact that the Elder Scrolls Blades came out. That completely slipped my mind. Only because it's come out, but it hasn't really. So if you signed up for the pre-release access beta business, then perhaps you might have gotten access to it yesterday or the day before. But I signed up for it, and a bunch of us have. We haven't yet.
Yep.
And Bethesda hasn't been giving it out to the press or anything like that. So videos are available online of people playing this game, and some people have been playing it. But we are not among them, which is slightly frustrating. We are going to be getting our hands on it very soon, hopefully.
Yeah, I signed up for it too, and no, nothing.
I'm sure, I mean, on the one hand, we'd like to get it off of Bethesda, but at the same time, that can come with its own restrictions if you're doing press stuff. So it might be nice just to find it. If you're one of those players and you have access, by the way, you're listening to the show, drop us a line. If you could just borrow your login, that'd be really good. But I understand it's only a very small group of people and they're rolling it out in small stages. So perhaps you're listening and you've played this. If so, let us know what you think. I am waiting for the rage to come because I can almost guarantee people are going to be screaming things about it being for filthy casuals and how Bethesda have ruined the Elder Scrolls, yada, yada, yada. So I'm looking forward to all of that, but I'd like to do it myself. There are a couple more new releases, not particularly big things, but we've done our roundup over on PG, so do go and have a look at that if you want to know more. I suspect next week will be a bit funkier with the new releases, so do check back. That'll do for this week. Thank you all for bearing with us during the two-week pause, and we'll be moving forward probably in something roughly this shape from here on in, with both Dan and Matt or some version of that combination joining us for the near future. So thank you all for listening. Go and find something to download that you like. Matt, Dan, thank you for joining us.
Cheers.
Thank you for having us.
And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.